I know things you never see. You never see someone taking a shit while running at full speed.
Come on, Key, get rid of some of them turds in the shit box.
Welcome to the Bathroom Break Podcast with me, Rab himself.
So today on Bathroom Break Podcast, my guest is Shane Hartline. He's an actor and also a former pro wrestler.
Wow. Where'd you find that out?
Dude, I saw one of those videos. Like, there was like a video, like an old video of you doing like this thing. It was pretty gnarly.
I was in it, man. I was in it real deep.
I wasn't sure what to expect when I like clicked on the video. I was like, oh, this must be a joke because, like, you know, you're a comedic actor and so I'm like, oh, this has got to be a joke. And then I'm like, dude, he's like really doing it.
I was fully in it. It was before I started acting. It was the thing I wanted to do, but I always did it with the mindset of like, I'm gonna be a wrestler to become an actor. The end game was always to be an actor.
But pull like The Rock or something. Yeah,
that happens. Obviously, it's happened to one of the biggest actors if not the biggest actor in the entertainment business. But I think it was something like professional wrestling, like, it's something that you can't go in and without being 100% invested.
You can't have
like ulterior motives because, yeah. I mean, your heart, you just have to, your heart has to be completely into it. It's a weird world, dude.
Dude, I'd imagine. I mean, it's an insane, like, sport.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is obviously the dialogue and the whole, like, soap opera of it all. But it just seems like you beat the shit out of yourself.
Yeah, and I think the soap opera, you know, the acting side of it was what interested me way more. Like, even when I was doing it, to the point where it's like, when I started getting hurt and the physical stuff, even at the, because I started when I was like 16, 17.
And okay.
By 20, I was feeling it, man.
Yeah.
Like, when I started like reevaluating, I'm like, do I want to not be able to walk at age 50?
Yeah.
Like,
seriously, dude, if you're feeling it at 20 years old, like, imagine.
I still feel it. Like, yeah. I decided about 20, 21 that, well, it was also the same time that like YouTube popped up, and that was like completely taking my attention and focus because we were all doing Jackass CKY stuff, like,
yeah,
all my friends were. And you know, like, I was like, man, this is it. It was the first time it was like, because we used to always shoot stuff when I was a kid, and like, you know, it was one of those things like you guys did. So it's like we would have like a VHS tape that we'd pass around everybody at middle school, and that was like the feedback we got. But then when like YouTube happened, it was like, oh, instant feedback. This is what I want to do.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
when I quit wrestling.
Okay.
I was like, I'm doing this YouTube thing.
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, when I met you, if you were still doing the wrestling at that point.
No, not really. Like, I dabbled. Okay. I still, like, occasionally do offshoots, like, little shows here and there, and definitely not in it full time.
Yeah.
But when we met, I was into acting YouTube. Like, that was my focus.
Yeah. Just to give an idea, we met when you were doing a project called Skittin' Across America.
Uh-huh.
And you had gotten in touch with us. I think maybe you met Joe Franz first.
Yeah.
And then...
No, I did. I met Franz on the second one, but...
Okay.
But
yeah, yeah.
You were on the first one.
Okay, so we met. So when we met, you came into town and a bunch of your friends, and you came ready to film.
Dude, I gotta be completely transparent and honest with you. When we did that, like, it was a really surreal experience for us. Because I'm not gonna lie, dude, like, and I'm not kissing your ass, like, what you guys did, like, it was why I started making videos. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
There was, like, something, because I remember we saw Jackass, and then it was, like, it was, like, murmuring of, like, oh, but Jackass is from this other thing. And then I found CKY, and it, like, just blew my mind, dude. The stuff you guys were doing, and, like, it really inspired me to start producing my own videos. And back when I did it, it was, like, two VHS decks stacked on top of each other. Just, like, the shittiest editing possible. But, I mean, it was so fun.
Dude, that's cool, man. That, I mean, that's awesome.
But yeah. So sorry to interrupt you, but so when I got to shoot with you, man, it was really like a surreal experience.
That's funny.
We were just on a volleyball.
Yeah.
Making up stuff, but that's always my favorite type of thing to shoot, and still to this day, it's like, I was talking to my sister recently, like, I produce a lot of stuff. I shoot a lot of stuff. But, like, I told her recently, I was like, man, I just want to, like, shoot something again that, like, there's, like, really no script and we just kind of make it up as I go. And the reason I'm talking about my sister is, like, she always used to be the one who used to film me. Like, so, man, I just want to feel that again. Because it's been so long since I've done something so just different and weird and not so, like
spontaneous.
The lighting has to be perfect.
Yeah.
And you know, like, yeah. So that was really a fun day, man.
Yeah, cool. And it certainly evolves to the point where it is, like, you're so focused on, like, the, you know, the composition of the shot, the lighting, all those things. And it's fun, like, because CKY days, we're just pick up the camera and go film something stupid and it would make you laugh. And and it was cool, man. But it was funny, yeah, because we just went over to some volleyball court and we were trying to, like, redo the Top Gun scene or something. It was like,
we met at a bar, had a few drinks, and we just went to a volleyball court and just, we were trying to recreate the Top Gun scene.
We had, like, short shorts on and
very, like, homoerotic. But I got to meet all your buddies, like Kirk, who was just on an episode. Such a fun episode to listen to.
Oh, cool, yeah. You meet Colt Darling.
Colt Darling. I had to learn the origin story.
Yeah.
And then Lord Botaro, Black Aquaman, all the dudes. And they were so cool. Everybody was so cool.
Yeah, dude, and it was fun to do that, and then to see what you kind of went on to do from there. It's really, like, you know, kind of, it's inspiring to me, too, because I watched you just, like, start to really just focus on it and go after it, and it was cool to witness that.
Dude, when we shot that, like, a week before I left, I got my first acting agent. So that was technically, like, the beginning of my acting career,
which was
working around that time when I worked with you.
Yeah, and I saw, like, right, I think after you came over to our spot, like, then you were filming something with Will Sasso from MadTV.
Yeah, so we when we shot this, we took a train to Philly, and then a train from Philly to Chicago to Los Angeles, and I don't recommend it to anyone going around the country on a train. It's not as fun as it sounds. But, yeah, when we got to Los Angeles, Will Sasso, whom he saw a video of mine on MySpace years before, maybe a year or two, but he saw a video of mine on MySpace, and, like, it was when I'm trying to put my mind on what MySpace even was like back then. Like, there was, like, a bulletin board, so he, like, reposted a video of ours, and we got in contact that way, like,
because
he saw a video of mine on MySpace, and then years later, I just messaged him and just was like, hey, do you want to do this DVD? We're giving all the proceeds to the Chris Farley Foundation, which was a really cool thing to be able to donate to.
Yeah, that's rad, man. And that is really cool. And my, like, thinking about Farley, you know, obviously died from addiction, and that's part of my story. I didn't, you know, die from it, but I, you know, went through it, and I'm in recovery now, and so that's an awesome foundation to give the money to. And I think
how long have you been off drinking and everything?
9 years clean and sober. It's been rad. It's been a good life like that. But just to think that, like, at that young age, you were aware of that, to, like, go, hey, I want to do this, but I want to do it, and anything we get from it, we want to put towards
to be completely honest, there was, like, a lot of motivating factors behind that. Like, when I came up with the idea to do that DVD, which, to sum up what I just wanted to take my friends on a trip and shoot stuff. That was basically the kernel of the idea was, like, I just want to go on a trip and shoot weird shit. And, you know, so I was like, well, one, that's going to be insanely expensive. I'm not going to be able to pay for this. And then if I ask money from people for it to do it, and this was before, like, a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter or anything like that, I was like, nobody's gonna give me money to go on a trip and have fun.
Yeah, like, go enjoy yourself.
It's just not gonna happen. So I was like, well, it makes total sense. I don't need to make money off this thing, but if we sell it and we make money off, let me find, like, a foundation or some kind of charity. And then I reached out to when I found out that the Chris Farley Foundation existed, which was actually on that trip, I was reading the book, The Chris Farley Story.
Nice.
On the back, it spoke about the Chris Farley Foundation. And I was like, oh my God, it has to be this. Like, so I contacted him and I got in touch with Tom Farley, is actually Chris Farley's brother, and spoke to him on the phone,
yeah,
which was really cool. And he's like, this would be something Chris would have absolutely loved. And so we got all the proceeds. And it was really cool to be able to work with them.
Yeah, nice, dude. That's rad. Yeah. So, so then, like I said, just to watch kind of your evolution over the course of that, because you know you showed up. I think you had this long curly hair at that point.
I was a
young kid.
Surfer, not surfer.
Yeah.
Never surfed a day in my life. Like a kid from a
No, it was rad, and but then to see like you know, and then you like came out to LA and you started doing the acting stuff and and doing like improv down at the Improv Olympic, right?
Yeah,
and
now closed. Did you hear about that?
Oh no.
The location out here closed, and they closed, and then like apparently like a couple months after, like the location was still there, obviously, and there was some drug stuff happened. People snuck in and were running a drug ring within the building.
Okay.
Some crazy thing
happened, but basically it became a crack house.
Kind of, dude. It's crazy.
That's
it's just sad because of like the memories we had at this like location.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. I had gone down to a couple shows and checked out some guys then because I was trying to put together a show at one point and like an MTV show where we would do like skits like Man on the Street kind of stuff and but I wanted to like pluck out like comedians from each town as we went.
Oh, that's cool.
And so we were like kind of developing the show and I was just checking out like improv
actors. I guess I missed the call, Chris.
I don't even know if I knew you yet at that point. But I had been down there and visited that and it was a cool spot. Like I feel like improv is some of the coolest stuff. And you did that for a long time. Are you still doing it now?
I still do it occasionally now. Like I started improv or practice when the first time I ever took an improv class was I was like 13 or something.
So yeah.
Like, yeah, I've been involved in improv since 13.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Yeah. That's rad. And then, so like while doing that, you've booked some, like some, you booked some pretty big stuff like that Rock of Ages movie.
Yeah. That was, to be completely honest, life changing. It was life changing. It's the reason I got to move to Los Angeles. It's the first time in my life I saw more than 4 digits in my bank account. More than 3 in me.
That's right. Well, dude, you're like in a scene with like Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the trailer and I was like, what the fuck? That's Shane.
That was crazy, man. Like,
I was like, damn, that's Shane Hartline.
I worked 3.5 weeks on that movie, but I was only in one major scene, but I was like, I played the character of like the lead bartender, Jimmy Bartender, so I was in the background of every bar shot.
Yeah.
But you know, I had this one line, and like even afterwards, Russell Brand was like, "Oh, that was a good. That was really funny, man. It was really funny."
Oh, cool.
Well, that was a horrible Russell Brand.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no, I felt like it was right here in the room. But that's a rad feeling. Like I feel like if Russell Brand is telling you that
surreal,
was good,
surreal
you're acting with Alec Baldwin. That's like that's pretty rad.
Yeah, but then I woke up one day months after shooting and got to tons of texts, and they're like, "You're in the trailer! You're in the trailer!" And
yeah,
so it was surreal, man. It was I mean, I could talk forever about that whole experience. Like, but it was life changing. It was after I booked it. You know, I was like, okay, because I had already been thinking about moving to Los Angeles, but it was one of those things like, oh, I got to save about $8,000 or come out here and be comfortable for a second. But then that happened, and it was just like, okay, this is the universe telling me, do this right now.
Yeah.
Right now. Even if, you know, looking back, I maybe should have sat in the Southeast market a little bit longer, but, you know, like...
Either way, you learned from doing it.
And I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't change anything about it.
You have a pretty big resume as far as films, TV, all that kind of stuff. And I think we were talking a little bit about like Disney stuff and Nickelodeon. So it's funny to think like that you kind of transitioned into that.
I hope they don't see some of the
YouTube stuff. I think there was some like MAGA thing that I just showed to my wife and she was dying laughing at it.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Recently I did a Disney spot, a Nickelodeon spot. Well, what's good about Disney and Nickelodeon is they most of their shows let you just be like way over the top, so it's just you get to have so much fun, man.
Dude, it seems like it. And that seems like an awesome gig to get. I mean, so what, like, was it like a reoccurring role on some shows?
No, the Disney role I just did recently was a guest star.
But okay,
I got to play like this radio DJ, and so it was like this really fun, like kind of bipolar type character where when he's on the radio, he's like this like radio DJ, and then he's off the radio, when he's not doing it, he's like this really like. It's just a completely different
mellow
person.
Yeah.
So it was just fun. It was fun being able to like jump back and forth between those two little personalities.
Yeah, that seems fun. So I had seen for a long time you had this show. What was it? The Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah, the Shane Harlan show. Yeah, yeah.
Which, it was supposed to be. It was at Improv Olympic. It was supposed to be one show.
Yeah.
It got such a fun buzz from the community at that theater. Like the owner of the theater at the time, he after the first show, he was like, "This is so fun and so different. Like you can do this until Chris comes." And the whole shtick was like, I for so long have had people tell me I resemble him. Like I look sort of him, and they're like, "You should do like a parody video or something." And I was like, "He's not the type of guy that's like a distinguishable voice." So it's like doing a parody of him was I couldn't ever really think of anything. And then I just got this idea, like I'm gonna do this like show where the through line and the theme is like I'm trying to get him to come be my co-host or just come to the show.
Yeah.
For what reason I don't know, but just to be on stage with me, I guess.
Yeah, but it's good.
But yeah, so it was like this mix of like. An improv show, a sketch show, and a freak show where we would have like jackass stunts and all kinds of crazy stuff happening. But yeah, it was so different in the theater the community of that theater, and yeah, it really started building a little buzz. And we were like six or seven shows in, and I had this buddy that was a part of the show, and every now and then he'd come to me, he's like, "Yeah, you know what, man? Like, I do yoga with Chris Pratt, and I swear, man, if I see him, I'm gonna get him to come." I'm like,
"Yeah, yeah."
It's Los Angeles. All these people,
right?
Big shit. And like, so I was like, I never thought anything of it. So we're six, seven shows in, and then all of a sudden, I get a text from him the morning of that show, and he's like, "Dude, I'm at yoga with Chris Pratt. I'm gonna go talk to him about the show." I'm like, "Okay, great, go for it."
Yeah.
And then he calls me like 15 minutes later. He's like, he's freaking out. He's like, "Dude, I just talked to Chris Pratt. He knows all about your show."
What?
Yeah, and he's like, and he's gonna try to come tonight. And he gave me his number. So my friend now has Chris Pratt's number, and I'm like, "Oh shit, okay." So
yeah,
this
is
the show where I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do if he actually comes. And
yeah,
we were doing our run through beforehand, and my buddy walks up holding his phone out, and it's Pratt's trying to FaceTime in because he's come to find out he couldn't make it, but he wanted to. Still like FaceTime in, say hi to everybody.
Yeah, that's rad.
But I told my buddy, I was like, "Well, go talk to him and tell him we're rehearsing. The show hasn't even started yet, but tell him to text you a video." Because in my mind, I'm thinking like, "Oh my God, if I get a video, a physical video, like I can use it forever."
You're right.
And so he did. He texted my buddy a video, and I have like a video now of Chris Pratt and Anna Faris. They were together at the time.
Yeah.
He's like, "Shane Hartline, and this is Chris Pratt," and he's like talking about, he's like, "I'm so sorry I can't come, like hopefully I can be there." And I worry because the theme of that show I was doing was a fake wedding where I was like getting married, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get him to come be my best man. And in the video, like, he's like, "Hey, I hope you guys have a great wedding." Like, I don't know if he's like doing it to play along with the joke of the show or if he really thought like I was getting married.
Oh, yeah.
So
like he gave a real heartfelt, like, "I hope you have it." Really, and you're like, I'm just messing with you.
Who knows? Maybe he was just trying to play along with the bit.
Yeah, no, but that's awesome that like you just kind of, you know, I feel like, from the outside looking in, that's kind of what I see with you, is like you go after it and you get it. And it's really cool to watch that, because even if that was a joke and you're like, "Oh my God, people tell me I look like them,"
it's a joke. What was bad about doing it was people started thinking I had this like obsession about meeting him. Like I'd get all these messages or days,
the
day after a show where he wouldn't show up, they'd be like, "Man, keep doing it, man. He's going to come." I'm like, I don't care if he ever comes. It'd be great if he does, but like, I don't really care that much.
It's part, and it's also, that's the joke if you don't get that.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? It keeps happening.
Yeah, like it's kind of hilarious that, I mean, to me, that like, you know, obviously you're playing a character that's a, like, this obsession with like, "I want him to come," and that's the whole joke. And I think, but that's funny, but it's funny that that whole thing kind of did get you to meet him, and he did that video. It's just cool. It's cool to watch because, like I said, you just watch you kind of go, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make this happen, and then you watch it happen. Like, I mean, you wanted to film with us, and then you came up and you made it happen. You wanted to film with Sasso from Mad TV. You made it happen.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Then you make this show, Chris Pratt, and then you're filming a thing with him, and it's just cool. And like I said, you're in a scene with Alec Baldwin, and I mean, that dude is freaking hilarious.
It's crazy.
It's like amazing, and just to watch that whole evolution of it is really cool.
Oh man, thank you, dude.
Yeah, so right now you're living in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm in Atlanta for a second. Like, I still have my place out here, and just kind of floating back and forth. But what's the word I'm looking for? Predominantly.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
I think it was.
I'm going to prom tonight.
Yeah, we're
good. No, but I'm predominantly in Los Angeles right now. In Atlanta, excuse me. There's just so much shooting there. Like, really.
Yeah.
Bottom line is there's a lot of cool shit that's shooting out there that I'm going to book. Like, Walking Dead is something I really want. And, you know, so I'm getting the chance right now, at least while I'm out there, to audition for certain things that are harder to get auditions for out here.
Yeah.
The type of things I want to book.
Yeah. I mean, and I, like I was telling you before we went on air, is that just a bunch of my friends, like DPs and camera people and stuff, they're doing a lot of work down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an insane amount of stuff happening. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. So, but you're back and forth. You're here and there, and that's awesome. So, what was the last thing you were working on? You did the Saturday Night Live tape.
Yeah. I've every year, I think, for the past 10 years, I put a tape together for SNL. And
yeah,
you know, I came 2014. I was able to showcase at the theater, that Improv Olympic. I was able to showcase in front of the producers. Like, they handpicked me to showcase in front of like 10 other people, or with 10 other people. So that was cool. Like, that was like the closest I ever have gotten.
Okay. So what is that like whole process? Like, how does that work?
The SNL casting process is ridiculous. So, well, first of all, I feel like mostly every season they're looking for different types of people. They're looking for different types of puzzle pieces, really. So it's like, you never know what they're looking for. So that's why every year I come up with a new tape of characters and impressions to send them. I mean, you know, because you never know what they're looking for.
Right, exactly.
But really, there's a lot of different ways they find people. Sometimes it's on YouTube. Sometimes I'll just come across somebody that's got like getting a buzz on YouTube or something.
Was like Bobby Moynihan, wasn't he like...
I think he was doing UCB stuff.
Okay, because I remember that Derek
Fred
comedy.
Was discovered on YouTube.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember that Derek comedy bits that Bobby Moynihan and Donald Glover were in, and those were hilarious. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if they got found on YouTube.
I'm sure all of it helped in the process of them getting casted. But
wait, Fred Armisen got found on
I believe that? So, yeah. He was making like musical comedy of some sort.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they found him on YouTube, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, the process is always, I mean, you can be discovered from like building a buzz at like a comedy theater that you spend some time at. You could be an actor that just sends in a tape.
Yeah.
You can be a stand-up comedian that sends in a tape. But ultimately, you send in a tape. Usually they pick certain people in major cities and you showcase like 5 minutes of characters and impressions in front of their producers. And then what happens, they'll just hand pick a couple people and fly them to New York and do the same thing all over again. But you're in Studio 8H, where you're like, you know, where the host does the opening monologue.
Yeah.
So you're doing your characters and impressions in front of like just Lorne Michaels and like maybe two or three other people in that big open room, and apparently nobody laughs, and it's just like,
yeah,
just
I've heard that
insane process.
It seems crazy. Like I've heard some of those interviews on Howard Stern where like it'll be like you know, Bill Hader or something talking about like how it's like he never laughs.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, that's got to be tough, because I feel like that's all you're kind of working for. Something like that. And
but you mean, the bottom line is like auditioning is mostly like that. Like, you go into a room and it's like most of the time they're not gonna have conversation with you. It's like you're there to see you and you do your thing and you leave. And auditioning is like such a ridiculous process. Like,
yeah,
it's so stressful, man.
Yeah. Okay. So they do that showcase, and you like, so they came in and checked you out after you had sent in the video.
That year, I actually didn't send in a video. What happened? My theater did like weeks of like preliminary showcases. So you do your 5 minutes, but you're with like, they would do like two or three nights a week of like 10 people. So like the person who runs the theater was watching maybe 100 to 200 people do their 5 minutes. And from those like 100, 200 people, like they picked like 10 of us to do our showcase in front of the producers.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit about like the audition process of just like, you know, getting a role with Nickelodeon or whatever. Cause I, back when I was doing like Viva La Bam, Jackass, all that stuff, I did like 3 auditions. Okay. And I always laugh because I'm like, God, I wish I had like the tape of that, because I know it was fucking awful. Oh, you know? And I'm like,
I don't ever want to see my whole audition.
But like, there's nothing funnier to me than like these like bad audition tapes. Dear. You know, like, because Darren Miller from CKY, you know, he's always watched like all these old horror movies.
Yeah.
And he turned me on to like watching that for like the bad acting and how incredibly comedic it actually is.
Yeah.
And that shit makes me laugh so bad. And I think about the 3 that I did and I was like, oh my God, they were so bad that like I would be embarrassed if somebody saw it. But at the same time, I would kind of want to be embarrassed so someone could see how bad that was and dude, get some laughs out of it.
Online auditioning sucks, man.
Yeah.
It is a ridiculous process. And it's hard to get to a point as an actor where you have to, you have to get to this point where you, it's hard to get to the point where you enjoy the process of it.
Yeah.
I luckily we're in a time in our industry where most auditions are taped. So I can do as many takes as I need to.
And oh,
it's
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
more comfortable. But when you're going and auditioning in person in front of casting directors, it's like one time, you get one chance.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, you better not fuck up. And it can
yeah.
it's stressful, man. It's stressful, but you gotta like, I mean, you gotta find a way to enjoy it.
Yeah. So okay. So like, as far as the process of it, like, okay, so you've booked a bunch of stuff. So what happens like when you do the audition? Do you walk out of there going, yeah, I fucking nailed it? They're
gonna. I'll tell you about my Rock of Ages
casting
process. So this was like, it was the most ridiculous casting process that I've ever been a part of. But so I went on tape for one part.
Yeah.
I got a callback audition a month later for 3 different other parts that I didn't even send in the tape for. So I went in, I auditioned for these other parts, and I felt pretty good. And then a week or two later, and this isn't the usual process of how this goes, but this is how that movie went. But then a week or two later, like, I get a phone call from my agent, and they're like, they want you to come to the table read. Like, and, so the table read is, you know, you're at a big table with all the actors. But I'm like, did I book it? And they're like, no, you didn't book it yet. I don't know what's going on, but they must like you. So I go to the table read, and what had happened is it was the most nerve-wracking day of my whole life.
I can imagine.
So we're in this big studio, and it's this big table. Every major actor that was in that film, and that film was stacked. It was like Tom Cruise, Alec Baldwin, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Paul Giamatti was sitting right next to me.
Wow. That dude's amazing, by
He's
the way.
So great. Yeah. Really cool guy.
Yeah.
So all these guys right around me. And what they did is they picked about 5 or 6 small actors to read like every bit part in the film. You know?
Yeah.
So they had all that filled up and taken care of. And so
you're just sitting there like, this, little dude, old me.
Before this, all I'd done was like YouTube stuff and a couple of commercials. So I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
I'm so nervous.
It's like one of the greatest actors ever sitting right next to you.
Oh my God, Tom Cruise, who at that table read, I got to read in a scene with, which I was so.
What?
So here's the thing. Like, let me paint the picture here. So it's this huge room. It's freezing. I have to pee the whole time, but I'm not going to be that guy who gets up and goes pees. No. So,
excuse me, guys.
let me stop this here. So I had to pee the whole time. And you know, like, that feeling just makes you even more nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just this long table read that, like, I was just, I, by the end of it, what I'm trying to get to is I felt like I bombed it. I was like, there's no way after this at all I'm getting casted in this.
Yeah, I think I farted a little at one point.
I might have peed. Everything is numb. I don't even know. But After the table read, like, I'm just kind of standing there, like, just looking around, like, taking everything in, and then all of a sudden I see the casting director coming up to me, and I'm thinking, oh, she's coming to tell me, like, great having you, best of luck in your future
endeavors. Get out of here.
Yeah. You peed everywhere. Told me that he actually is the director, apparently, from the table read. In that moment, like, He's like, I think the director is considering you for this other part, Jimmy the bartender. And in my mind, too, the actor in my head, I'm thinking like, oh, so this part must not have any lines. You know, they're giving me something.
He's going to be great in the background.
The background feature part or whatever. Yeah. But he ain't saying anything. But no, it was apparently like a much bigger character than I was auditioning for previously. And,
cool.
And I found out a couple weeks after that, they want to book me as Jimmy the bartender.
Fuck. So when you got that news, what happened there?
I was working for my dad's company at the time, and like I was, it was funny. I was on a job, and at the time I was a state licensed fire extinguisher inspector.
I don't know. This thing seems a little rickety.
Like it's working to me. What I would do is I'd go into businesses and check their extinguishers and make sure everything looks good.
Yeah.
So I was at this big job walking around with this like maintenance guy, and I got the call and like I freaked out, and he just was just like, I'm like, sorry, I just got a call, like it was like, like a life-changing call. But I was with this dude who has nothing to do with me. I didn't care at all, but
yeah,
like,
he's like, okay, does the fire extinguisher work?
Yeah, that's great, but can we do this, please? I worked like 3.5 weeks on that, and like,
dude, that's cool,
such a surreal experience, like,
yeah,
being around all those guys for that long,
yeah, like, and they were just, and it was just like they're gracious, and it was just,
oh man,
cool,
everybody was cool. There wasn't like one. You know, you hear all these stories about, like, big actors, like, but I can't say one negative thing about anybody on that set.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, I do camera work, and what I've always found is that someone in the middle of the road can be a little diva-ish, but the top dogs like that are always mellow and cool.
Well, it's an ego thing in the middle of the road. They want to be perceived like they're a bigger deal.
Yeah,
then when you become that bigger deal, it's like, well, I'm here. Like, you know, just...
Yeah. But,
it was surreal, man. There was one day, like, I was sitting, like, by all the trailers or whatever, and, like, so there was this girl sitting next to me, and I was kind of just on my phone, like, doing my thing. This was between scenes or whatever, and all of a sudden I see Russell Brand walking up, and this girl gets up and he kisses her, and I'm like, oh my God, that was Katy Perry.
Oh, cool.
Katy Perry was just, like, sitting next to me for, like, 20, 30 minutes, and I didn't even interact with her. Totally missed an opportunity. Could be married to Katy Perry right now.
Yes, you should be.
Damn it.
Totally blew it. Totally. So then after that, then you, you know, all of a sudden you're on this trailer that's all over TV. It's in the theaters. They're playing it before, you know, whatever movie you're going to see, and I was like, because that's where I saw it, and I was I was like, what the hell? I was like, damn, Shane's in this big ass movie.
Volleyball.
Yeah. And it was rad to see it. I was psyched, man, because it was like, damn, I knew you like had been like just kind of going after it for a while, and honestly, like I have, you know, there'll always be like. Like, you know, because I had done some TV stuff, there'll always be like family friends or something. They'll be like, oh, talk to Chris and see what it is.
Sure.
And I'm just like, do you want to try the hardest thing in the world?
It's insane. You know, the hardest part is understanding how long of a journey it really is.
Because, yeah.
You know, it was great for me to book something that big so soon in my career, but it was also tough because it's hard not to have booked something like that and then moved to Los Angeles and not think like, all right,
here
it's
we go.
Easy street from here. The parts are going to roll in. But, you know, a month or two after that, like I was doing background work. And there's nothing wrong with background work, but it's like you realize like this industry is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And like you really got to check your ego at the door and just be, you know, humble and grateful for everything as it's happening. Like,
yeah,
you know,
and that's exactly true, and it's funny like when you see people that do get this huge ego and it's like, hey, you know, they could just take that away like tomorrow.
Yeah,
and it happens, and it happens a lot. I mean, right now, especially, it's happening. But it's really cool that you know that you do appreciate that experience, and then And then as you go on, you appreciate each step of the way. And like we were talking about, I mean, dude, you book Nickelodeon shows, you book Disney shows. Like, that's awesome stuff.
Oh,
and
thanks,
and it's cool that you just, you know, you keep working at it. But like you said, understanding that it is a journey rather than just like, well, I'm on my skyrocket to fame, you know. And I think it's just cool because, like I said, I would talk to some family friends and I'm like, guys or girls, this is a really hard thing to do. I'll tell you what, I'm a camera guy because it's a really hard thing to do, you know. So like, you know, it can be awesome one day. Like, I mean, I had a fun ride with Jackass, Viva La Bam, all those things. And then after that, it was like, okay, now what? You know, and I'm trying to get a show sold, and I had two in development, but they didn't go. And then you're all, oh, what am I gonna do? And then I went and tried to finish school, and then I'm like, I don't know what to do with myself. So I started doing production side of things, and then fell in love with the camera aspect of it. And I still write, and I'm trying to get to a place where I'll direct a feature.
Yeah.
I have a couple that I have written that you know, working on getting funding for that stuff. And but my journey kind of shifted because I found a lot of interest in the side of the filmmaking process.
The bottom line, man, like, and we were kind of talking about this before the podcast started, but Mark Duplass, he recently, like, I was on listening to a podcast with him, and he's talking about like soul points, and it's like that whole philosophy, you know, we do so much in life that like just like gut wrenching stuff that just takes away soul points, but like you've got to find those things that give you back those soul points, fill you back up again. So like, I mean, it's all with age, man. We have to find the things that fulfill us.
Yeah.
You have to.
And it's so true. That's an awesome kind of concept, I think. And we were laughing a bit about it. I'm like, damn, I sucked a lot of soul points out and I got to replenish. But so we do work in Haiti with our nonprofit Hope
that
for Today.
So cool.
And yeah, dude, it's rad. I was talking to you a little bit about it, but
you're about to go there.
Yeah. I'm heading down in a couple weeks, and
that's
then
so cool.
We'll be there for a week. And like I said, I have a guy that is my mentor down there, and then he connected us with a bunch of the locals that have become really good friends.
Yeah.
And we work on projects together, and we get stuff happening. This trip is to bring some of the solar lanterns and some water filters in, and then I'm going to kind of shoot a little video to give an idea of the next project, which is building an additional classroom onto school down there. But yeah, like, the people are incredible, and it has been very fulfilling to do that. So so I continue to work on that. But also on the other side of it, like with the filmmaking processes, you know, I work as a camera guy, so sometimes you work on shows that are less than desirable, and you're like, you feel like your soul's been sucked out because you're like, this is just garbage, but it's a paycheck. But when you do that, it's funny. So you work, you know, 14, 15-hour days, you know, on doing your camera work. And then when you finish that show, you're like, you know what? I'm going to go work for free on this other project with a buddy because it's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's
going to make those so much sweeter.
Yeah. And it's going to be like a really funny project or a cool project where you get to try some, you know, creative things and that stuff. It's like, wait, you're going to go do it for free? It's like, yeah, because that's going to replenish the fact that I just did that.
Yeah.
You know,
I believe that philosophy 100%.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's really, really cool. And so, I mean, I know you, when you were starting, like, you were a part of that whole production stuff. So at this point, do you kind of have guys filming for you? Because you do put out a decent amount of content. I see stuff from time to time and always crack up. And I forget what it was, the one MAGA thing that
That was a part of my SNL tape.
Yeah, you said,
character that he's this, like, redneck guy who you'd look at, and at first glance, you'd think he was a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
Which, not going to get into it, I don't think that.
Yeah.
But you'd look at him and you'd think he was a Trump supporter, but in his MAGA on his hat actually stands for his company, Merle Atkinson's Gator Amusements.
Okay.
So he's like, I'm sick of getting all these people that are coming to my park, the wrong people. Like, I don't want these people to come.
Yeah.
So he's just like caught in the middle of this stuff, but he's like, I, you know, I'm not changing the name of my company.
That's funny. But so I guess my question is,
yeah,
you have your YouTube page,
yeah,
and that's
still up there,
Wooden
yeah.
Steel.
Yep.
Yeah. And so what is the actual handle? It's Wooden Steel Productions.
YouTube.com/WoodenSteel.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. And then you're just putting out content. So do you have guys that are like, do you have like a little kind of group of people that are filming it for you, or are you filming it, or?
Yeah. When I started, you know, it was just like, one camera tripod operation, but like, you know, over time it's like you meet people and then like, oh, let's start incorporating lights. So, oh, let me upgrade from Final Cut to Premiere. And so over time you just like start, you know, you get a desire to want to make things look better. And what's been really cool in the past couple years out here, I've met a lot of like film school students, and these guys are so hungry to like make stuff, and like, and that's what I want to do. So like, but they're wanting to make stuff that looks really good and like,
yeah,
way past my abilities.
Yeah, yeah.
But like my strength is like, I guess a producer in a sense. Like if I have an idea, like I'm the guy that like, I get joy from like bringing people together who are like, oh, I know a cinematographer, oh, I know a sound guy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like, I feel like I just have this like Rolodex in my head of like kick-ass friends that like do all these different things.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, like by the time you're listening to this, it'll be out there, but I'm releasing this short called The Birthday Boy. And I shot that last year on my birthday because I was just like, all right, this year I just want to make a horror short. And so like I went on Facebook, I was like, does anybody have access to like a cool location? And one of my buddies like hooked up this like really cool house in the desert. So then I was just like, okay, just started reaching out to everybody. Like, and we made this kick-ass short that we sent to festivals and like, and gotten a couple festivals, but like, yeah, now it's turned into this like bigger operation, and I am almost finished with a feature, and like, so all these like bigger, fancier things, but like
film finished with a feature as far as writing, or you're saying you're
I produced my first. Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, like narrative feature.
Wow. And it's already shot in your.
Yeah, it's called The Slua, but we're gonna change the name because when you see it, nobody knows how to say it.
Yeah.
But it's about this creature from Irish Celtic folklore.
Oh, I remember when when you were like, I guess raising money or
fundraising. Yeah. Which Indiegogo fundraising is. It's a tough thing, man.
Yeah.
It's a really hard thing. And it's a hard thing to ask for money
from
anybody, like, to do something that's just, like your thing. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's just
hey, we're going to have a blast. You won't be there. And I don't know if it's going to make
any
money.
Give me that money.
Yeah.
But, we actually, this past weekend, we finished a working cut, as we were calling for a festival. So it's, like, it's almost done. So it's, like, I got all these, like fancier things I'm working on, but like, you know, there's always a part of me that just wants to make just like a goofy sketch again.
Yeah.
You know, just that,
well, that dude.
You know, like who, I don't give a shit how lighting looks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's just shoot something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's incredible though, that you finish your first feature. Cause that takes
daunting.
A lot, man.
Daunting.
Yeah. Yeah. I had done a couple short films and, I'm working towards, a feature, and yeah, it is quite a
let's not, graze over the greatness of Hot Dog
Castle. Yeah.
That
right.
That shit is revolutionary.
Right. Revolutionarily bad. But,
I mean,
it was fun. It was fun to kind of start to learn that process, because I think for most of my life there had always been other camera people and other
you just showed up and did your thing.
Yeah, and it was easy to just kind of jump in there and I'll be like, oh, okay, I'm a part of this, and they'll figure it out afterwards.
Yeah.
And this was like learning that whole process of producing and directing and figuring that out.
You get another appreciation for it.
Yeah,
you know?
And and then I went on to do the Borrowed Happiness, which was like a 40-minute one, which was too many people, too many characters, not enough character development, all these things. But I learned all this stuff throughout that process. And now this next thing that I'm working on that is a like feature length stuff is very simplified as a result of having done that. Too many characters and too many things that aren't developed and all this stuff. So I was like, dude, I'm going to simplify this to like a basic few and kind of really focus on developing the character and the story and doing that. And I think, I mean, it's funny how all of these little steps stepping stones teach you so much along the way.
Well, I think your first feature is just a learning process.
Yeah.
Like you can't, I mean, sometimes you hit a home run, but like, I think the first feature is a learning process.
And yeah.
Like, the DePlace brothers, like, huge inspirations to me. Like, I their first feature, they even like, they're like, this is not what we want. But then they just started, like you said, they just started simplifying and focus more on like character and like less on how great everything looks. And then they made this short or this feature called The Puffy Chair and got it Sundance. And like,
oh, so wow. It's
like, they just like really simplified the process and focused more on like what really matters, you know, in a production.
And so wait, the Slewall is, you said what genre?
Horror. Found footage.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's about this creature, in Irish Celtic folklore. It's called the Slewall. It's like a fairy tale that they tell, but it's like their boogeyman sort of that they tell about in their culture. But there's never been it's never been shown in a feature or anything like that.
Okay.
So when we were working on pre-production, we're thinking like this kind of just like fell in our laps. Like we were researching and like, oh, this thing actually works perfectly with the concept we were like thinking about. And oh, it helps too that nobody's done a movie about it.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little found footage thing, you know, like we wanted it to be found footage, not as a way to like be lazy, but like as a way to make it a little bit easier for our first one. And you know, like what was fun is like we were like, okay, even though we're making found footage, which there's a lot of found footage horror films, and most people like when they hear that, they're like, ugh, like, but because like there's so many found footage horror films that give the genre a bad name. Like they get lazy and they just, people make them to make a feature because it can be easy. But like with the story we did, which is, and I'll try to say this as quick as possible, but like the story we did was about a chick that has like a TV show that documents haunted locations. So we shot it with really nice cameras because it made sense in that like story. So it's like we were like, yeah, we're doing a found footage, but we want it to look real good.
Yeah.
And like we want to think about all the shots we're doing, even though it's found footage. We like, it's like, I'm not gonna lie, it's probably one of the better looking found footage movies that will exist.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really excited for that.
What did you shoot it on?
We shot it 4K, like little.
I mean, what camera?
I forget.
I'm just a camera nerd, so I get all excited.
I would say, oh my god, I should know this off the top of my head. Sony something.
Like, okay.
I mean,
FS7s or the F55s or.
I couldn't tell you. I'd have to find out.
Yeah. No, I was wondering because
we'll
like I said,
follow up episode.
Yeah. All about cameras.
2 minutes, and I'm just
answering that question. Nice. Well, dude, I mean that's so cool that you got that done. Like I said, huge undertaking to make a feature,
insane.
And then you're saying it's inspiring you to kind of go back to the beginning
it's so
of
fun again.
Just like
not that's not fun, but you know what I mean. That joy.
Well,
it's a different
I thing. Feel like that's fun. After the fact, it's not fun during it. And people might lie for an interview to say that it is, but it's stressful as hell. And like, especially if you're directing or if you're producing, you're in a place of like, get this done. And the people that are there, like when I was making that Borrowed Happiness, the people that were there on set, they were having a great time, but I'm like,
you're doing 10 different jobs.
And that's
what's happening when you're doing like your own low budget thing like that. It's like, I ended up being an AD and I was lead actor and producer. And so it's like, I'm scared, like running around like crazy.
Yeah.
It's a very stressful process, but like, it is a learning process and you like learn how to do what you'll do differently next time.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that when you're done and the cut is done, you go to a film festival, you're like, that was awesome. That was so much fun.
That's when it's fun.
It does feel that way after the fact, but yeah,
you're
like,
right. You're right, man. For sure.
But yeah, so you want to go simple, man.
I was talking to my sister recently because it's been so long that I had done something that I didn't care about, the lighting or having a crazy location. Like, just like, man, back when I first started doing YouTube videos, like, not gonna lie, like one of my first videos, I have to send you this link. One of my first videos on my original YouTube channel was just me shooting my buddy doing a parody of your cat.
Oh yeah, the Kiki thing.
Your cat character.
Because
we would just do all together, mimicking like the bits you guys did, and like,
that was
one of our first videos.
Yeah, like, that's
just,
good.
Like, let's just go in the backyard and shoot you next to the cat.
Yeah. Dude, that's funny. Yeah, it's funny that that one bit like kind of caught on, and when Bam and I did it, we filmed it. We're just being stupid, yeah. You know. It was like there was like this microwave Salisbury steak dinner in the thing, and it was like, "Oh, Salisbury stew," and it just became this ridiculous thing. But as we're editing it, I remember sitting in his edit room, like on the couch, and I'm all deliriously tired, and he's editing it, and then he's putting this dramatic music to it, and then like, and we just start cracking up, and we're crying, laughing, yeah. But we're going, "Dude, I think we're just delirious. I don't think this is funny," and like we're like, and we were. Like laughing so bad, like crying, and it's like, I think this is just us. This is just us. This isn't going to be funny.
That thing would stand the test of time.
Yeah, and it ended up being the thing probably I'm known for most out of, like, I mean, the X-Lax shit, and then that, and then Russian Mail Order Bride thing. Yeah. But that stands up to the point where when Drake did that song, "Kiki, Do You Love Me?"
Oh God, that was the first thing I thought of, dude. I swear to God, I almost texted you. I was like, dude, you gotta do something.
Dude, well, my wife said she, because. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm putting together this podcast.
I'm so glad we're talking about this.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, so I'm putting together the podcast, and I'm like, I took like a screen grab of like an old hot dog casserole skit, and I'm like, I put it up on Instagram, and like, you know, like 10 people like it, and it was like, well, you know, I don't know, like. I guess people don't want to hear this podcast. I said that to my wife. I was like, I guess they don't care. And she's like, no, you're doing it all wrong. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, you got to do something with that Kiki thing. She's like, and that Drake song, like, why don't you do that dance challenge thing with that? And I was like, all right, I guess. And I was kind of like, I think it's old at this point, because it was like probably a week old.
Yeah,
I'm like,
maybe.
I was like, maybe it's old. And then she's like, you should do it. And then
it blew.
Yeah. And I did it. Yeah. And then a bunch of people were watching. They're like, oh, I got it. And I'm like, oh my God, she nailed it. And we kept joking. She's my new manager now, because she figured, she's
she
like, yeah. Because she gets it. She knew what she was like, yeah, do that. And so it's fun. And we've got a little something in the works that's happening now to add to that character of the Kiki.
I love it. That a voice you were doing before that, or just on the spot?
Yeah, like it was always something like, so I call my sister Juggy. Her name is Jill. Okay. And I'd always be like, Juggy, like, and do just stupid things and do that voice for, like, because I have a nickname. And Bam, like, I'd name him like Boovra, or like, oh, little Boovra, you know, and like, and like, oh, Bang Bang, and like, we. You know, in some weird kind of way, we all had these fun little, like, nicknames for one another. Like, his brother Jess is, like, Jess, but then I turned his name into Quedgenald Denny, which is, like...
Okay.
So it's ridiculous, yeah. But then Bam is, like, you know, Bang Bang, Bam, you know, Bam Bam, but Boovra and Booze and, like, all these things, and that voice kind of, I just always, it always felt like that sounded funnier when you were saying those weird nicknames to it. And then that's what led to naming Salisbury Steak Salisbury Stuber, because it was just like calling it some other name that was like close to it but not it.
So fun.
And that's what led to it being
Ben, you guys just picked the camera up and shot the thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Bam always had a camera around. Yeah. So then we were doing it, and it was just fucking funny because that cat Kiki, well, his real name was Whiskers, but it was Phil that called it Kiki.
Really?
Yeah, like he would be like, oh, come here, Kiki. Like, and so then I was just trying to feed it like a piece of that Salisbury steak. And the fact, like, how bad that cat wanted nothing to do with me was like, was the funniest part of it, you know? Like I'm like, that is, it's just looking at me like, so over me, and I'm like, dude, that was hilarious, you know. So we just kept doing it, and then Bam was like, dude, you got the thing, and then he's behind it going, ah, come on, cat, you know. And we're like, we're just messing with it, and then that led to a couple more, and then we, because April, like, you know, she cook a lot, so she'd have all these different types of food, and one day we saw this huge can of like tuna fish, but it was oddly big, you know, like, and was like, what is that? And it was like as big as, like, it was bigger than the cat's head. So we were like, and then there was another bit was like trying to get it to eat the tuna. and then after that, it was like, well, it's got to shit at some point. So then it was like the need for shit box. Like, this cat's going to need to take a shit. But it just got, like, we just annoyed the shit out of that cat. And it was, but it turned out to be a lot of fun.
Dude, so fun, so fun.
So,
well, I mean, some of the, like, the best memories I have, like, genuinely, and, like, it's just trippy to, like, sit here and talk to you about this kind of stuff. But, like some of the best memories I have is just, like, me and my buddies, like, in high school, middle school, like, sitting around watching, like, CKY, and then, like, all right, now we got to go do something. Like,
yeah.
You know, it was very inspiring, like, you know, because it felt, like, so, well, it was very independent, but it was also just so gritty, and, like, you
yeah.
know, you guys were just, like, so, there was a real connection between you guys.
Yeah.
I think that was what
made
it so special.
We're all, like, best friends, and I think that's what feels so cool, to be a part of something that like, I felt like, everybody was doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, every group of friends was doing it. We just happened to have a camera.
Yeah.
And then as it got more, like, recognition, obviously we started taking it to the next level of certain things. But I felt like it connects because everybody's doing it. Like,
yeah.
And we just happened to be the lucky ones that got recognized for having a camera around. But I think, you know, that's why it connects, because everybody has that.
Everybody's
in
doing
yeah,
that kind
yeah.
of thing. Yeah,
and you know, and you're like, dude, I'm with my friends and just messing around. And it's so cool because, like, as I would go on tour with, you know, like the bands like CKY or other, you know, other bands as I'm touring and trying to promote some of the show and stuff, all the, like, band members were a similar type of people that are just, like, you know, farting on somebody's face while they're sleeping or whatever. And, like, all that's going on everywhere. So it just all felt very,
how,
like,
do you think,
natural.
Like, what you guys did would have translated if, like, YouTube was a thing?
I don't know. I mean, that's a funny thing because I met some young kids. I think I was probably about 30 at that point, and some, like, 16-year-old or something, 16-year-old was like, wait, so how did it work? Like, you just shot it and then put it on YouTube, and then they just, like,
just
they got the show? And I'm like, there wasn't a YouTube. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, there was no, like the internet was, like, barely a thing.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, you know, it was around, but it was like AOL, and it was like, beep, for like 6 days before you could get a picture, you know? And so it was like, yeah, it was the VHS thing, and you know the story, it went to skate shops and did all that, but I don't know how it would be different or how it would translate in the YouTube era.
Well, I mean, like, it's hard to say. Like, I was thinking about this recently, like, there's, like, the like Logan Paul and, like, the Jake Paul kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know about those guys.
Yeah.
Like, insanely popular. But, I mean, really, he's doing, like, the shit like Bam and you guys were doing. Like, they just film each other, like, doing crazy shit. And when the camera's off, they're, like, kind of pretty much normal people. But, like, for some reason, he gets so much shit now. And, like, recently I was thinking about, I was like, well, Bam was doing that. He wasn't getting any shit. Like, what's different? Like,
shit as in terms of, you mean?
He gets a lot of shit because people think he's a dick because of the crazy stuff he's doing and the pranks he's pulling on his friends.
Well, and that brings up a good point. It's funny. So I did I just filmed a show called Too Stupid to Die. I did it last year. It's going to air November 2nd. And it's, like, basically, it's coming out on MTV, and it's this dude, Zach Holmes, and his buds, like, you know, Cody and Blazer and all, you know, all these dudes, and they do crazy shit, and it really reminded me of us because it was the small town guys doing like wild stuff. But Chad Tepper is a guy that is involved with, like, Team 10, like, knows all those dudes. He came out and filmed a bunch with them too, and so it was fun to meet those guys, and it was kind of like the next generation of what that is. But I think, like, to your point of, like, he gets a lot of shit, it's such a different climate now that, like, it would be hard to kind of be that little, like, asshole, because, you know, like, at the time, people didn't know what hit them then, and it was just a different world. Like, it was like, oh, you're just being young little jerks. And now it's like, well, you know what? Now you're aware and you shouldn't act that way.
Mm.
Another thought that I had about it as we were talking is that the thing that might be tough with like a CKY video nowadays, because let's say back then things were very slow paced. You know, you're watching a movie and it builds up, or you're watching a TV show and it builds. And guys like, you know, or shows like Buzzkill and Tom Green before Jackass did very similar things, because everyone goes, oh, it was so unique, the Jackass thing. I'm like, Buzzkill and Tom Green did a lot of stuff that was similar to that too. It's just, it was a new take and it was a skate culture and it was all these kind of things that added to it that, that made it its own unique thing. But there had been things similar to that prior. But I'll say at that time, the style of the edit for CKY was very quick.
Yeah.
And it was very like, okay, this is happening, that's happening, this happened, this happened, and that's, and so your mindset was like, oh, what happened? I got to rewind it. I got to, because you were slowly watching other things and the build-ups, and then all of a sudden it's like, you don't have time for build-up. It's happening, happening.
They did a lot of things with like his like montages where there would be like sometimes a split second shot of something. And those were always the things that like I would rewatch.
Yeah.
Wait, was that really a guy that's like naked on fire? Like,
yeah, dude.
What's the story there? And I my brain would start going like, "What happened there? Like, these guys are crazy, man." Like,
that was you know, brilliant on his part. I think for the edit style, for that kind of stuff, because we all knew that like, if you saw a Jim Carrey movie, the thing that happened in the background, or like, let's say a Naked Gun, like Leslie Nielsen sort of thing, there's something going on behind the scene that you're watching. And you look in the back and go, what the heck is that? Uh-huh. And so that mindset, you know, Jess and Bam and I and Brandon and Ryan and Rake would always kind of talk about that idea of like, I want to rewind it to see what that is. Yeah. And so I think that probably played a lot into Bam's style of, let me throw something in there that's going to like throw you for a loop. And that quick cut style, I think, you know, helped people go, okay, look, I didn't feel like paying attention that long. And now I can just, and there's always stuff happening. Mm. So with the YouTube thing, that's where I think it might be tough to even have like an hour long video that has all that stuff, because you're like, I just want to watch a 30 second little thing that has a bunch of shit jammed into it.
Fine.
And then I want to move on to something else.
How?
Yeah.
Like it was just six fucking seconds.
Yeah. So you see that real quick and then you want to move on. And I think especially where we're at now compared to 20 years ago is like, yeah, dude, you don't want to pay attention. You just want to see this. Give me the information. I'm bored with it. Let's move on. Yeah. And that's good and bad, you know, because in some ways you're like, you're just taking in all of this information.
It sucks. Like,
yeah.
I think it sucks because it's just making every kid, like, I have some nephews that you know, their brain is wired to like YouTube entertainment, so it's like quick, give me more. And like, I think it's only going to get worse and worse unless somebody comes in and like starts bringing it back around again or something.
Well, yeah, and I think that at some point it kind of has to do that. I mean, I feel it myself with just like technology, just staring at a phone all day. I'm like, dude, I'm all stressed out. I didn't do anything. Yeah. Oh, I'm stressed out because I'm looking at all this crap.
And the worst thing is like, I have, and I'm working on it, but a bad habit of like the first thing I do would be reach for my phone. And like that's the worst thing to do at the start of your day, to set your, sometimes I'll pick my phone up and get a text about a project that pisses me off. And it's like, oh, I'm set in that for at least a couple hours. I'm pissed.
Yeah. I already pissed off as soon as you wake up. Yeah, dude, I've actually the last about 4 months, I've specifically not done that. I get up and I meditate for 10 minutes before I even do any of that. And then I have breakfast and do that. And then I'll get into that, because it does that. It does stress you out.
Yeah.
And, but I think at some point that does have to shift, and maybe it will individually more so than, you know, the masses.
Uh-huh.
Because it is helpful in some ways, but in other ways it's very much a hindrance.
Yeah.
Because how many times do you feel like you're looking at your phone or you're doing all this stuff and you don't get things done that you want to get done?
Or an hour or two goes by before you know it.
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, I think if you were to try to put CKY video in this day and age, I don't know if it would do well, because I don't think people would want to pay attention long enough to even catch what it is. You know, like, maybe if you split it up and you put like those random montage and then you do this stuff, like, people would love that.
Uh-huh.
But like a whole hour of it, they'd be like, I'm going to watch this real quick. I want to go, because it's, I mean, our attention spans are getting even worse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think about it even just with like current events, you know, like you're like, oh, you know, obviously the president did some crazy thing, or this person did some crazy thing, or, you know, like it was like that Kavanaugh stuff, like, you know, that guy was nuts, and you're like, oh my God, oh my God. And then it's over the next day and everyone's moved on to something else.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't even talk about it. It's already over.
Weeks over stuff.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy because we've become so desensitized to that at this point, like, me taking 18 X-lax and shitting while running, like people
would
be like, eh, whatever.
People watch that now in a 6-second video, and it would be gone.
Yeah, you know? And it would just be like, eh.
Yeah.
And it would never be, it wouldn't even be that alarming. Like, then people are like, what the hell? But like now it's just like, meh, okay, what's the next thing? And I just feel like it would be tough to push that envelope at this point. So working with the kids for Too Stupid to Die, I mean, they're doing some gnarly stuff. Like Zach, the host of the show, he put a whole entire like firecracker vest on and then lit it on fire on himself. And it's like blowing up and it's like ripping his skin off. It's freaking crazy.
Oh, damn.
And dude, I mean, like I always laughed at that kind of stuff because I'll do the gross out things like the shit stuff. It was easy to do. And then, you know, the kiki things. And then, you know, do some stunts here and there and whatever. But not to a crazy extent. And then you see like other kids or guys or girls or whatever that are like doing insane shit. And they're like, man, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, you are nuts. You know, but it is like you see that, the evolution of what it is. And you almost have to. Even throughout the Jackass years, you had to continue to, you know, top yourself or the person, the next person on the cast.
That's like the discussion of like, I mean, there's always people that want that next Jackass movie, but like, what else can these guys do?
Yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, like, it would be odd, like, because people ask for another CKY too, and it's like, dude, at this point, you just kind of got to leave well enough alone.
It's like the sequel thing. You know, some movies, like, they hit a sequel and it's good, but most of the time it's like, man, I didn't need Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah, you know? You didn't.
The original was just as...
No, it was incredible. And like, Jackass 3D, it's like you found a good way to do the third one.
Yeah.
You know, 3D,
yeah,
and just leave it there. And CKY.
I like what they're doing now. They'll have like a written story mixed with stunts and stuff. That's kind
of fun. Yeah, like with Bad Grandpa?
Yeah.
Like that was hilarious. I worked a little bit on the end of that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right. and production side of things. But that was hilarious as hell. And so that stuff, it's good. It's like good to evolve. And like I was saying, like people asking about a CKY, it would be really weird to do it without Ryan. You can't.
Sure.
You kind of just can't do it. I mean, you definitely just can't do it. But it also would be weird if he was still here too, that just like at this point, we've all kind of evolved into different ways. And it's like, that was what it was. You captured a moment in time. It was incredible. I had a lot of fun. You know, some of the best times of my life. But to try to recreate that, it feels like you're trying to have that party that you had in high school. And it's like, you can never recreate that party.
It's nearly impossible to put lightning back in the bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I'm working towards... making films and going in that direction. And that's why camera has been my thing, because I always thought, like, it was kind of when I got chosen to development and they didn't happen, was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to learn how to shoot this and edit this and do this so I can just do the things I want to do.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what's happened over the course of these years, is just figure that out. And now, you know, and filmmaking has become more of an interest, I think, than... then some of the other stuff, like as far as being in front of the camera. And I say that lightly, though, because at the same time, while I'm making that stuff and I'm doing the camera thing, I do have
that itch.
Yeah, there's a part of me that's like, man, I want to go back in front of the camera and do some stuff. So I'm actually going to do that in a couple weeks after I do the Haiti trip.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to the East Coast. And there's rumor of shooting a skit or two with DiCamillo.
What?
And then
dude.
Yeah, and then my other buddy Marcus, who shot all of Hot Dog Casserole, he does some really funny stuff too. And so we were planning on doing a couple skits with him too. And so that'll be fun. So
Deco doing these things?
Dude, he's always creating hilarious stuff. Like he's so funny because I mean, you work with him a little bit and you know him, like he's another level, like comedic genius.
It's insane.
Yeah, and he's never lost it, and it never goes away. Like, so I'll go over to his house just to be like, hey, what's up? I haven't seen you in a bit. He'll be like, oh, Robbie, come here. And then he'll like bring me down into the basement, and he'll be like making like, you know, some sort of like nutcracker in the shape of like Rake Jan's face. And he's like, ah, and he's talking with it. And then like, he'll have like this whole like kind of like community made in the basement of like toys and different things, and like I'm like, what the hell's going on down here? And then he'll have shot like little videos and show me like little clips and stuff, and I'm like, dude, this
just
is so funny.
He's just doing him, just
yeah, he's just doing it, like working on it.
I think I remember you telling me that. Yeah. He shoots a lot of stuff like by himself.
Yeah, and then you'll be like, what are you doing with it? And he's like, nothing. Nothing, right?
I love that.
And I'm like, yes.
Fuck it. Like, if it makes him happy, yeah. Shit.
And he's like, I don't want to put it on the YouTube or these other things. He's like, because I don't know. I mean, he's like, I just think it's hilarious. And then, you know, and then he just loves doing it. And I think it's like his kind of his pastime and stuff like that. So he's always working on something like that.
I love it.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe someday he'll put out some of those skits and whatever. Yeah. A little while back, he put out this thing called Cattle Bag. And I don't think a lot of people saw it. But there's this one skit called, like, Amanda Thomas Malone. And it's this it's this man. It's like ATM, you know, like ass to mouth. But it was but the guy's name was Amanda Thomas Malone, and he was a politician, and it was like this slander video, and it's like one of the funniest things fucking ever. And I don't know where to find it, but I did have a copy of Cattle Bag at one point, and I don't know where it is. I think my brother has it, but yeah, the dude is hilarious. Yeah. And so I'm hoping that we might shoot a little skit with him here and there, and then we'll see, because like I said, there always is an itch to like get in front of the camera, because like I'm behind it all the time and doing that, and I appreciate that and love that, but having shot since I was like, you know, 12 years old, I can't even remember the first time I shot something. I think the first time something was on a video, I was 12, but like we had shot things before that. Uh-huh. And having done that all those years, it's like, it's always in you, man. You always want to like kind of be a fool in front of the camera.
It like scratches an itch, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you know the same thing. I mean, you've been doing it at the same time.
It's a fulfilling feeling, like, to, like, have made something.
Yeah.
Your own thing. Like,
yeah.
It's really special.
Dude, it is. It's very gratifying to go, hey, we went out and did this. And even if it's just nonsense, by the end of the day, you're like, well, we have something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, it's almost like if you're, like, building something, you know, because you're, like, at the end of building it, you're like, damn, it's there.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of how like filmmaking process is too. It's like, oh wow, we put something together, we created something that wasn't there prior, and it's fun to do.
Yeah, and what's really fun about it is like most of the time you'll shoot something and it ends up being something that you never even like originally envisioned. Like,
yeah,
that's, I feel like, what happens most of the time with the things I make. It's like through the process, it's like, whoa, where did this come from?
Yeah, it never goes according to plan, and I think that's what's so great about it.
Yeah.
You know, but dude, we'll have to shoot a skit together.
I'd love to, man.
Yeah, I know you're busy and you're in town for a little, but if you're here, whenever you're back, let's film something.
Let's make something, man.
I'm on this show right now. I'm working a lot of hours, but I finish up and then I go to Haiti. I'll be out in Westchester, Philly area.
All right.
And doing that, and then when I'm back, and whenever you're back,
keep me posted, man.
Yeah.
I will make a trip out here.
Ah,
just to
shit.
Shoot something with
yeah, me. Hell yeah. Well, how long are you here now?
I'm here till Tuesday, just a couple days.
Okay, so yeah. I'm supposed to go up to San Fran Sunday, Monday, but it might be cool if we have time. Maybe
dude,
we
let me know,
shoot
man.
A quick
I'll get
clip of something.
Together. We'll
yeah,
do something simple.
Yeah, that would be cool. So, so you're out now for a
out now to
like an audition
some
or
apartment stuff.
Okay,
to do your podcast.
Oh hell yeah!
But my birthday's next week, so I'm like,
oh yeah,
just meeting up with a bunch of friends and stuff.
Nice. And then you'll be back down in Atlanta.
For a month or two, and I'm probably gonna come back out here for like pilot season. And
yeah, right.
Take advantage of
and so, are you a part of an improv troupe right now, or?
I mean, I'm still technically a part of one. We haven't performed in a couple months, but like,
yeah,
I'm still a part of like an improv troupe, but we don't really do that many shows right now.
So. Okay, yeah, I was gonna say if you had one to plug or whatever, but
no, I mean, really, just check me out on social media. Like,
yeah. You know, so you're, is it at Shane Hartline on Instagram?
On Instagram, it's Shane_Hartline because motherfucker took it, sitting on it.
Yeah, I have an underscore as well.
Yeah. But Shane Hartline on every other platform.
Too. Awesome. Yeah, dude, and Wooden Steel is kind of up and churning and doing some things here and there.
Yeah, YouTube.com/WoodenSteel. Like, when you're listening to this, the Birthday Boy short will be up there. So, please go check out the Birthday Boy. It's my new fancy production.
Yeah, and subscribe to his YouTube channel. Yeah, and then also, Wooden Steel produced the Slua.
No, that's a separate thing.
Okay. Cool. Well, cool. When do you think you said that is going to go to
a
festival?
That'll probably be done. We just submitted to a festival. That'll probably, hopefully, I would think, be on store shelves maybe February, March.
Oh, damn. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Nice.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Hell yeah. We'll do.
Or in theaters. We want.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you'll be able to get it pretty soon.
Nice. Well, congrats with all that stuff, and
thanks, dude.
Keep doing what you're doing. It's rad, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, dude. Anytime.
Sweet.